Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The Imprint Companion Podcast is, of course, brought to you by Imprint Films. Imprint Films is a brand new Australian boutique Blu-ray label. Check them out for limited edition deluxe Blu-ray releases of long-requested and previously unreleased films. Check out the past and future releases online at imprintfilms.com.au. You can follow Imprint Films on Twitter at imprint_films, or one word, on Instagram at Imprint Films, no space, and finally on the Facebook page at Imprint Films AU.
Let's do it, baby.
Welcome to another Imprint Companion, the only podcast on the Australian internet about DVD culture. I'm your host, Blake Howard. In fact, I'm your co-host, Blake Howard. And joining me, as always, is a lord of Australian movie podcasts. He found Drago. He lured Ling. He's the Netflix film buffet and total reboot king. It's Alexi Toliopoulos. Hello, mate.
Hello. It is my pleasure and my honor to be in the company of the Zodiac Chronicler himself.
Well, here we are. We're here to unbox, unpack, unveil upcoming releases from Australia's brand new boutique Blu-ray label, Imprint Films. And we've got a cracker of a batch, Alexi.
This is the first of two episodes on the March/April 2021 Imprint drop. We're talking Imprints 35, 36, and 37. The Gambling Farce, starring Richard Dreyfuss, Let It Ride. The feature film debut of writer Jeffrey J.J. Abrams in Mike Nichols' Regarding Henry, starring Harrison Ford. And the tale of Hollywood's original gangster, Howard Hawks' Scarface, a personal favorite of mine.
Ooh, I know. I cannot wait. I've been dying to talk to you about a bit of Scarface, because the total rebooters who've jumped the ship into both Imprint Companion and into 1-8-Minute Productions know your love of that movie. And it's really an iconic double, an iconic twofer in the total reboot universe, the Scarface.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For now, they were the last in our reboot remake style of podcasting.
I know.
We've changed it up, and Scarface was the perfect one to put the freaking pin in it, baby.
All right. Well, what have we got today? What's the first one we're covering on this batch of Imprint?
Well, let's talk about Spine number 35. We're talking about Let It Ride.
Excuse me. I'm taking a survey. Who do you like?
Horse number two.
The fourth.
The one horse.
I always bet on five.
Up yours.
Thank you.
Richard Dreyfuss is Jay Trotter, a man with nothing to lose.
You finished with that?
Knock yourself out, pal.
But an uninterrupted losing streak.
I don't deserve this anguish.
There's a horse in the third race.
The man just said that the only way this horse can lose is if lightning strikes. What do you like? You like the odds on lightning?
I mean, really, I don't see why you people can't just watch the horses run around the track and not bet on them.
Just let me win this one.
On one great day, Jay Trotter, Richard Dreyfuss, has a chance to make all his dreams come true. Let It Ride is Trotter's motto. After learning about a horse arranged to come in first, he is determined to place a bet and then parlay his money. Trotter thinks he might have a chance to win a fortune if he doesn't listen to the advice of his friends. A funny assortment of characters who bring a new meaning to the expression, the odds. Based on a novel by Jay Cronley, who also did Funny Farm and Quick Change. And also, Blake, I will tell you this. This is the only other film by director Joe Pitka. Do you know what his most famous film is?
I know because you text me, Alexi, but tell the people who are listening. I was like, what?
Freaking Space Jam.
It's mind-blowing
stuff.
It is. So firstly, if you haven't seen Let It Ride, it is a total, unbelievably wonderful farce about a band of degenerate, eccentric gamblers led by Richard Dreyfuss, who is kind of a real lovable shitbag. And when he's playing a lovable shitbag, he's really, truly at his best. The novelist, Jay Cronley, who wrote this, his other film, Quick Change, is another iconic heist movie directed by Bill Murray, and that's like one of the only films he ever directed in his entire career. I cannot strongly recommend another film that has the same kind of farcical nonsense energy. They both totally would make the most banger of a double feature. But man, I'd never seen this one before. I put it on, and can I just tell you, it just took me on the funnest ride. I mean, it's just, sorry to be like really kind of like lame about that comparison, but it's so funny. It is really terrifically directed. The aesthetic is just washed out, depressive. Everyone's clothes look horrible. Everyone looks like
it's
they
smell smoky.
Everyone looks like they smell like bourbon and cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And I totally, that's one of the ones in this batch. I was literally like, run it back. I could watch that movie back to back.
Absolutely.
Such an awesome one. You had fun?
I love this movie. This is such a surprise winner for me, but also kind of encapsulates what I think this batch is, because I think this batch, I got to say it, is very weird. It's a weird assortment of six films. The weirdest that we've had so far. It kind of 100%. Stands out a little bit because of its weirdness. A lot of movies that you would never expect to ever come into the conversation of like what should get a boutique physical media release.
100%.
But this one kind of was the key to me figuring out what it was, because I'd never seen this movie before, but I'm very familiar with the poster or that picture of Richard Dreyfuss, hands on his knees, clasped, the money raining down him. And it's because this was a DVD cover that I saw thousands of times. I used to work at a video store, like putting titles back. I'd always see this one like on the shelf. I was like, oh, what's that? Richard Dreyfuss. Okay, cool. And I think what this batch is, like the identity of this batch, is weird physical media, video store, kind of like oddities, like films that just live in a video store.
Are you saying that this is the Monday morning returns of the Imprint Films batches so far?
Oh my God, that's exactly what it is.
Oh my God.
Because these are or even the films that don't leave the shop. Like a lot of these are like just hidden treasures that are just like sitting on there that I just have so many vivid memories of, like walking past this video, this cover. I know exactly where it was in the store that I used to work at. I could walk in like a medium trying to find like a missing person and know exactly where it was. And like, all of these ones, like Regarding Henry is so much like that. And I think all three in next week's episode or the next episode of this podcast are exactly that thing.
Unbelievable.
And I think this one is such like, it exactly encapsulates that feeling of like when you just stumble across something unexpected. You don't know, there's no buzz around this movie or anything, but it's such a fun ride. It is such a good comedy. Everyone loves a good gambling movie, and this is like one I would put this at near top tier, like just a tier below like the all-time greats, because I think it's like interesting, it's weird, it's very funny, it has a monster cast.
Oh,
like this is like this is character actor central, basically, because it's led by one of the all-time great character actors, Richard Dreyfuss, who somehow was a leading man. I don't know how that happens, but I'm so glad it did.
We only have to thank Steven Spielberg, because he went all in on Dreyfuss, and that's why we live with him.
We thank you, Stevie. We thank you, Georgie boy. You guys brought him out to us. But then you've got David Johansen, a.k.a. Buster Poindexter, as his like gambling buddy. I'm always fascinated when David Johansen comes in from the New York Dolls. Like when he's around, I'm like, man, he's entertaining. He's like a proper entertainer. Then you got Terry Garr, one of the all-time greats, in my opinion. And I love seeing her in a comedy like this. Jennifer frickin' Tilly. Robbie frickin' Hagrid Coltrane.
Wait, we have to, like, firstly, Robbie Hagrid Coltrane, who is just amazing in this movie.
He's great in this movie.
He's just so great. But Jennifer Tilly, of the World Poker Tour fame, who literally went on to be a degenerate gambler herself, which is just amazing. You then have Alan Garfield, ladies and gentlemen, who is, in fact, in The Conversation, FFC. Yes. It is
absolutely.
It is a wild movie.
You've got a young Cynthia Nixon as well, of all people, from Sex and the City. Then you got Richard Edson from like Ferris Bueller's Day Off and stuff like that, playing it kind of heavy. But also Tony Longo, who is like the all-time great heavy, does in fact a short film that is just, it's called like The Death of Tony Longo. And it's just like clips of him playing heavies and like directed DVD movies. And they give him a character arc just using all these clips. So whenever I see him around, I'm excited.
And it gives him one of the coolest Tony Longo moments in his entire career, because it's Tony Longo standing at the front, and he's like he's like the Hagrid of this movie. He's a giant standing at the front of the race crowd, and people go, "Get down in front." And he goes, "Who said that?" And the whole crowd just, you can hear a pin drop. It's just, there's some really funny, there's some, if you want to get mad. So on this show, you're going to hear us gushing and trying to bring to light a movie that is absolutely worth your time and your money. Mm-hmm. And you should seek it out on physical media, because we are lovers of the physical and getting physical with our media. Now, if you want to get really mad, go and read some of the reviews of this movie, Alexi, because
I know, right?
They are so off base. They're so like, oh, maybe we're making light of a subject that's too hard. Oh, I don't get the chemistry. And it's like, what are you talking about? This movie is a blast. It's telling you right from minute one that it is a complete farce, and you should take it that way. And if you've missed that it's a farce, you need to leave the cinema or leave your lounge room, and you don't get to watch it and enjoy it and have fun with it. This movie was a scream. And so many people, when I tweeted about it, watching it, and I know that you were watching it too, people were like reaching out going, man, I haven't seen that movie in decades. It had the major rounds in American cable, and they're like, and then it just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah, and I got to tell you another thing. Like, I would definitely recommend this to people if you like kind of like genre hybrid comedies like Midnight Run or something. Yeah. I think this is so in the same vein of Midnight Run.
Definitely.
And what kind of made me feel that was, I think the score to this film by Giorgio Moroder, of all people, who like does like some of the craziest the scores, like Neverending Story and stuff. He's a true like composing king of like this decade, the 1980s. I think this is one of my new favorite like comedy scores. I would put the score up there with stuff like Midnight Run and Howard Shore's score for After Hours, of like what an interesting like 1980s comedy scores.
Great.
I think the freaking score was phenomenal for this film.
And Joe Pitka, there is a really weird interview, because like, as Alexi and I just talked about, he directs two massive movies. Like, Let It Ride was, like, a pretty big movie. Space Jam was a monster. And it's such a behemoth, and he kind of disappears off the face of the earth. And he even sounds in the interview so funny, like, quirkily cantankerous about being in a position to make a movie that was a studio movie and not, like, an indie movie or a short or something that was totally him. So it's just one of those weird times where, like, you pluck a kind of uber creative out of the woodwork into the mainstream, and then they're like, I'm good with this, and then they dip out. So yeah, it's one of those rare finds. We talk about for Imprint, like whether you guys need to buy it and whether it makes it batch worthy. And this is a weird, you know, the never rentals or the Monday morning returns, but I think this is such a scream. Like, I'm recommending this to everyone. Yeah. Like, as soon as it comes out, you guys have to get it. It's too funny not to get out.
Yeah, I would say if what we've talked about sounds like in your vein of like what comedies that you find interesting, this is a no-brainer for me. Like, this was such an enjoyable discovery. And I think like on further viewing, like I already know that I'm going to watch this movie again, because like, this is a put it on and enjoy movie. I feel like my love for it will grow, because it's just like, it's a bit of a hang because of all those cool character actors. So it's a bit of a hang, this film.
It's you nailed it perfectly when you said like it's got that Midnight Run quality, which is a huge compliment from Alexi, and it's true, because Midnight Run only gets funnier when you know the lines. Like, the more that you know every line of that movie, the funnier it is, because every single time that Robert De Niro's Jack calls himself Alonzo Mosley, and then people start saying that they've met him before, and poor Yaphet Kotto has to explain, it just gets better and better. So this is, I think it's got that quality too. Yeah, it's definitely a ripper.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's dive into something that is slightly more different, more quirky, but nonetheless, it's probably, out of this entire bunch, except for Scarface, the most well-known and recognizable title. And I would argue probably exactly as you said, probably the most recognizable cover if you're in the DVD shop, and introduces one of the most prominent filmmaking forces in Hollywood today. It's regarding Henry.
And call my wife and tell her I can't make dinner at 7:30.
Be fine for the defendant on all counts.
Yes.
Success made Henry Turner's life perfect.
Give me a break, will you? I just want a pack of cigarettes.
Fate.
Henry, I know you can hear me.
Made it something more.
Cardiac arrest caused a lack of oxygen to the brain. It's going to be a long, tough rehabilitation.
I'll be your physical therapist for the remainder of the evening.
All right. In some ways, he's starting from scratch here.
You're stepping like a natural man. Go ahead.
Little loop, cross over.
How did you learn to do that?
You taught me.
Such a shame. I mean, he was so good.
You've got a life back at home with friends and family and everything you could ever want.
They love you. They're going to take care of you.
So Henry Turner, played by Harrison Ford, is a successful but ruthless New York lawyer who needs to win at any cost, even at the expense of time with his family. But a single gunshot to the head brings Henry's fast-track rise to a dead stop. And he's incapacitated. He's got no memory of the life he used to lead, and he's essentially starting over. And he's about to learn some hard truths about who he is. Alexi, what was it like watching Harrison Ford get shot in the head and live?
This was a truly bizarre movie. This was, I had known about this movie forever because it's Mike Nichols. I had seen the freaking cover on the walls. I have vivid memories of picking up this DVD and just going like, what the frick is this movie? Because I'm like, Harrison Ford, Mike Nichols, then later finding out J.J. Abrams as well. I'm like, what is this? I always made fun of this title. I'm like, this is the worst titled movie of all time.
One of
like,
the worst.
Regarding Henry. I'm always thinking about Regarding Henry. What the fuck is Regarding Henry? And just like, who the fuck is Henry? And what is he in regards to? And now seeing the movie, I know what it's in regards to. It's in regards to his condition because he got shot in the head by freaking John Leguizamo in the first 10 minutes. And he's trying to come from comatose back to like, you know, walking, talking, regular person. And walking, talking, able-bodied person. And it is... This is so weird. I also remember like having the DVD in my hand, like back in the day, like when someone returned it and it's going like, let's get regarded in here. Let's get regarded in here. Just because I'm like, what is this? Who calls a movie Regarding Henry? But not bad.
One Jeffrey Abrams. One Jeffrey Abrams calls it that. That's what he does.
And he's in the movie as a little delivery boy.
A little like... Super awkward delivery boy. He's so awkward that you're like, it must be the writer. There's no way absolutely. It's not.
This guy paid his way to get a cameo in this. But I actually did not mind Regarding Henry. After everything I said, like making fun of it for like a majority of my life, I genuinely had a good time with this very weird movie because I think it is like, it does have a good cast. You've got like Bill Nunn playing a prominent role. You've got Annette Bening playing his wife.
Annette Bening is like totally wonderful in this movie.
Fantastic. It's pretty moving. Like it is a genuinely pretty moving movie. And Harrison Ford does not get enough praise as a dramatic actor because he mainly, you know, does blockbustery thriller action movies.
Yes.
So every now and then when you get this drama Harrison Ford, it's interesting. Like it's, he always brings something interesting to the role. And I think that this might be like one of the most interesting performances he's ever done.
Yeah. His other big.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Dramatic roles that kind of put him on the map are two Pakula movies. And of course, someone like myself is so in that Pakula world. A Presumed Innocent is one of his greatest roles. I mean, he does a role with Peter Weir in Witness. In Mosquito Coast. And then he does Witness as well. He's a really terrific dramatic actor. And I think this movie, it's really funny because the whole point of this movie, I guess, is that like when you get a choice in your life to accept who you are as it is and just like that's it and I'm never going to change. But this guy, like, just it's like if Jason Bourne got found on the side of the water and was just like, I'm never going to find out who I am, I'm good, and then just like went and worked at a supermarket. Like, that's what's so weird about this movie is that he's not, there's so many like bombshells that like come zipping past him and he's just like, no, I just want to be a dad. I just want to be this new guy. I just want to be this guy that is like 10 minutes old.
Absolutely. It's kind of interesting because I think, like, you know, Mike Nichols is a master director. I think when this movie is cooking, you're like, there's a master in the kitchen here. But I actually would say it's the script that kind of lets this movie down because it does lack that. Like, I think Mike Nichols finds some of the nuances that you would want from a film by him. But I think, like, the script is just still very, like, straightforward down the line, quite predictable. That kind of like stops it from becoming even like another lesser Mike Leigh film from this time period, which is like Emma Thompson's Wit. I think it doesn't even quite reach that level.
Yeah.
Let alone not even close to Primary Colors.
No. And yeah, it's a weird one. It's enjoyable. And there's a really terrific Roger Ebert quote about it, and I think both Alexi and I sorted out, because sometimes you have to go to kind of like the masters to sort of go like, that was a weird
move. To get the pulse of what was going on back then.
I need to see what was going on. And he says this wonderful quote, which he says, and sort of spoilers to the ending, but I don't think anyone who's listening isn't some way familiar. He's like, the ending of the film shows Nichols reaching back to that kind of barn-burning formula that paid off for him in The Graduate, where Benjamin disrupted the wedding ceremony in his cry of anguished hope and love. Again, this time, the ritual of staid public ritual is really interrupted by the arrival of a seeker after truth. But it's so neat, so formula, so contrived. I was thinking about The Graduate instead of about the characters I'd spent 2 hours with. So I suspect was Nichols. And so it's kind of ruthless, but it's so spot on. And that's, I think, exactly tags to what you said. This is a master cooking in the kitchen. He kind of knows where this movie actually has legs. And has those moments that can be rousing and allows people to sort of grab onto then, you know, to reclaim their life and move forward. And it does definitely have those qualities, but it's just dropping. It's like Lost. Like, this is like J.J. Abrams at peak Lost. It's like dropping hints that are so belabored through the movie about like these like red herrings about where the movie's going to go. And then it just ends very conventionally. And so it's kind of, it's a hard balance between those two things. And so, yeah, I mean, look, if you want to see some vintage interviews with Harrison Ford and Benning and Mickey Allen at the time in 1991, or if you want to get Peter Tongat's take, which I started listening to, I haven't got the whole way through as an audio commentary, just about the film to sort of talk about some of that stuff. I think it might be there, but this is definitely a weird one for me. One of the softer ones in this batch.
Yeah, but this, I will say, I like this way more than I ever expected to. I always thought this was going to be like, I was always like, this is a classic, like bad prestige movie. But I think it's a little better than that. And mainly because I like Bill Nunn so much, and like seeing Bill Nunn have quite a meaty supporting role. That's worth it. That's worth watching this movie for. If you love Bill Nunn, and if you don't know who the frick Bill Nunn is, watch the frickin' movie, dude. That's the other thing.
All right. I can't wait to talk to you about this one. Let's go back to 1932 to the original gangster, my friend. Let's do it.
Scarface. In the 1920s, the United States was reeling under the impact of prohibition. The sale of whiskey, wine, and beer was prohibited by law, but there were many willing to break that law. Gangsters took over. Crime flourished. Mobs fought each other for prime territories.
There's no use arguing with this joint. Ziegler runs it himself.
Step on it.
And blood flowed in the streets.
One of the most influential movies of all time is Scarface 1932. The original Scarface is an exciting story of organized crimes, brutal control over Chicago during the Prohibition era. Academy Award winner Paul Mooney gives an electrifying performance as Tony Camonte, an ambitious criminal with a ruthless drive to be the city's top crime boss. Produced by the legendary Howard Hughes and directed by the equally legendary Howard Hawks, this compelling tale of ambition, betrayal, and revenge is a groundbreaking masterpiece that influenced all gangster films to follow. Blake, I love this movie. I'm actually dying to hear your thoughts on it.
I love this movie so much. And what I think about this movie now is that even for 1932, you can feel that this movie was radical at the time because so many people talk about, you know, the 80s Scarface and talk about Al Pacino and De Palma. And obviously that movie is unbelievably iconic. But I remember revisiting the film so far long ago, about 15 years ago when I first saw the original Scarface, and now watching it ready to talk to you. And I was like, this movie is so dangerous. It's playing with lots of different themes, and it, like, way more of the themes than you could possibly think of resonate in both films, both the Scarface you may be familiar with Pacino, and this one with Paul Mooney. And it is, I love this movie. It is very unbelievably subtly and subliminally shot by Howard Hawks. Much so that Martin Scorsese's The Departed is, like, also in the Scarface universe for me because of how much it is replicating so much of the iconography and the symbolism that is happening in this movie. But it's just, it is one of those movies that is radically ahead of its time. It is definitely classical in so many of those things, like formal styles and acting that you would be familiar with. But thematically, this movie is just unbelievably rich and still influential and iconic. And you can just see why it had such an influence. It literally is, you know, the Total Reboot boys definitely know this as well. It's about, there are genre busters in different things. And this movie busted genres so bad that, you know, even, you know, 2000 and, you know, 2000s Oscar winning best pictures are still contending with and riffing on the ideas that are in a movie that's made in 1932. So I love this movie a lot.
Yeah, I'm right with you. Like, gangster movies genre is, like, my favorite genre. It's, like, where I get really geeky. It's what I get really excited about. It's, like, my first love into film and into cinema and becoming a cinephile. And I think if you like that, you do owe yourself and owe the genre the trip back to the 1930s to see where this became, like, the, like, one of the genres that was, like, first in cinema. Like, it, you know, there were other, you know, the gangster things existed outside of cinema for before it, but this is really like an early cinematic genre that exists very, like, you know, I had to put into words, I'm struggling here because I love it so much, but, you know, it's an early cinematic genre.
It's chicken or the, you know, it's hard because it's
a genre before it, before cinema came around.
Yeah, it's chicken or the egg stuff, man. That's the thing I think it's so hard to do because it's like right then in the 1920s or like early, you know, obviously like very late 19th century, like early 20th century, like cinema is coming into an art, but when cinema is an established art form, this genre like takes over. And it's like, and so, that's the language of, so, you know, obviously the language of film noir and the entire gangster genre and all those sorts of things. But yeah, it's just, it's really special. And the transfer we talked about via text even before recording, it is really beautiful.
It looks great. Like, I've been wanting this movie to have like a really good physical media release for some time. I remember I had to buy like a cheap like $3 DVD that I found at like Dick Smith when I was like 15 for this film. So I've wanted this for so long, and I'm so, I cannot tell you how happy I am that it's here, because I would say of the 1930s gangster movies, there's a lot of great ones, but I think Scarface is the one that has aged the best, and it's the one that I think is the most iconic. But because it's United Artists, not Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers was like the iconic gangster studio at the time, like the gangster, they produced all the gangster pictures, all the ones that became iconic except for this one and a couple of others. But I think because of that, you know, it's kind of just disappeared apart from having like a big remake. It kind of disappeared. It hasn't, this version of it hasn't had like a lush re-release or as excitement. It's all the people like Scorsese and De Palma that have like kept it alive, like for this movie. So it's like such a rare treat to like see the best one like come back like this and look this beautiful, be in a box this nice with like loaded with special features as this is. Which is, I cannot believe that I finally got it. Like, it's so exciting. But also, the thing about this one that makes it the best is this genre is all about being ripped from the headlines. Like, and this one is so much like, they take so much from Al Capone. They take so much from his life and so much of like his notoriety and like build that into a film that is very tonally interesting. Like, there's weird humor in it, there's like physical gags, there's stuff that's very scary and stuff that I would consider like very violent or strikingly scary in like a menacing gangster kind of way for an old picture like this that I think still hold weight and still hold value today.
Yeah, it's that's what I mean. It's like it is quite radical. Like, it just, that's the best way to describe it. That's why, absolutely, I guess the filmmakers at the time were getting so much scrutiny from the studios and from, you know, obviously this is peak Hays Code time of making sure that, and having to, and for the Hays Code, if people aren't familiar, it was basically a set of rules that Hollywood at the time sort of for many, many years had to adhere to that, to make sure that their films weren't, basically hurting the public, hindering the public, or saying messages that are antithetical to the values of the country. And under that banner was a lot of, you know, sexual repression and a lack of being able to do any kind of anything kind of violent. And as the Hays Code kind of dwindles away and then kind of dies in the late 60s, you know, you see that explosion of what becomes New Hollywood. But this is one of those films that is really towing the line. In fact, I think it pushes the line and steps over it a couple of times in this movie. And it's like, it's truly like 1932 and you're like, wow, they got away with that? Like, that's so cool. I like it.
And one of the cool things about this box set or this release is that it has multiple versions of the film. And so basically what the versions are is that they had to like tack on a new ending at some point. Like, so it released theatrically the way they intended it, but it had like a scrawl at the start of the movie where they're like, this movie is telling you gangsters are bad. And then you watch the movie, go, that's not what this movie is doing whatsoever. No. All right, that the movie doesn't do that. And then like they had to tack on an ending where you see Tony Camonte go through like the legal process of being arrested, going on trial, being hung or electrocuted, I can't remember, but you know, receiving capital punishment. And they have the original version that doesn't have that ending where he like dies in like the fight, much like the Scarface that everyone's familiar with. But then they also have this one where he goes to like through all the punishment. So it's kind of amazing to finally get both those versions like this.
And any release for me that has, and this is where Criterion is so wonderful as well, as another label, is if you, and I do have to loud Fox are really great at doing both versions, and some of their more recent ones, especially Ridley Scott versions, do have both. They do have the original theatrical and the later one, but you got to love when they just give it warts and all. Like, I want the version that was ripped away from the director, and then I want the one that's pieced back together. We saw it earlier with Major Dundee, the great Peckinpah movie, that we saw the version that was ripped away and then we saw the reassembly. And so I'm just all for that, because it's such a good thing as a film geek to be like, you know, we want to kind of see, I want to kind of see the altered version first.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's 2021 and people are still, I mean, there was a whole gang of internet folk are lobbying for their favorite movie to get its cut. So, you know, I'm just saying we like both cuts coming out. We like to see both of them out there.
And it's one of those interesting things as well, like that alternate ending that was tacked on. Nobody knows who made it. Like, it just exists and the cast of the movie aren't in it. Like, you never see Tony Camonte's face. You never see Paul Mooney in that final section. It's all like, it's so weird. And so
Hawks,
like, they kind of go
Hawks
into it.
And Hughes, nothing to do with it.
No one knows. No, literally, they don't know who did it.
It's bizarre. Love it. And so just on those special features, Drew Casper does the audio commentary with the theatrical version. There are some good interviews as well with Matthew Sweet and Tony Raines, where you just, if you can't get enough of like the lore of this movie, those guys do a great job chatting about it. So I really enjoyed those. But that's it for the first part of our March and April 2021 batch of Imprint films. Mate, this has been always great to talk to you. Do you want to give
a pleasure.
Can you give a shout out before we talk about where folks can find us? Can you give a shout out of that monster May 26th bundle that we're about to like have dropped on our face?
Yeah, I'm really looking for Alfie. That comes with the documentary as well of My Generation, which is about Michael, or about the 60s narrated by Michael Caine. That's what I'm really looking forward to in that batch.
I am dying for James Caan's The Gambler. I'm dying for it. I'm so crazy for it. And for our international listeners, I know that the Criterion have currently got a great gambling retrospective that's happening right now that includes The Gambler on there. So getting that on physical media for the first time is going to be an absolute treat. But my friend, my legendary co-host, Alexi Toliopoulos, where can folks find you between our shows if they want to hear more of your beautiful voice and your hot, spicy takes?
Hot voice, hot takes, and also hot, beautiful boy can be heard on Netflix's The Big Film Buffet with Jen Fricker, where we give you previews of what the big Netflix releases for that weekend are, giving you some recos for your weekend. Very fun, exciting podcast. And also Cameron and I are back with Total Reboot, where we are going through teen movies at the moment. We picked a big genre that we love a lot, that people connect with the movies a lot, and are doing maybe a dozen or so episodes about iconic teen classics like American Pie, Ferris Bueller, etc., etc. Blake, what have you got happening at the moment?
I'm neck deep into Zodiac Chronicle for One Heat Minute Productions. Also popping up are some great episodes of Miami Nice, because we are continuing to find incredible filmmakers and film buffs and artisans who just, I mean, they're just fiends for mojitos, just like me and my great co-host, Katie Walsh. We can't get enough. If you want to find anything that we're doing, that I'm doing, it's just all on oneheatminute.com, and that will lead you off into all those other things. But Alexi and I, this Imprint Companion is part of a suite of podcasts that Alexi and I are now going to be doing called A Serious Disagreement, which will cover all physical media stuff that we talk about. We've got the Imprint Companion that will cover Imprint specifically, but there has been a bit of When Harry Met Sally, I'll Have What She's Having, with some of our great physical media producers around the place that are wanting to get us to chat about their great stuff, and we are looking forward to chatting to it with you and with each other.
But we will say that Imprint Companion will remain pretty much unchanged, but there will be a few extra episodes here and there in Serious Disagreement where we'll be talking about other great physical media pieces. Because we freaking love DVDs and Blu-rays, dude. That's the truth. We love them.
We love them. We love physical media. We love touching things. We love smelling the cases. We love slip cases.
We love the smell of it, the taste of it.
And we love the sound of it. And you, hopefully, have loved the sound of this podcast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.